views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hornville Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hornville Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings and mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Hornco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hornco Radio Network, I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you! Ha, 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 ha!
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way, then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I've heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories. Watch them
free. Ladies and gentlemen, this time it's Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
Alright, greetings ladies and gentlemen and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where you get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. Yes, and that fresh topics are plenty, as always, we got tonight. Some of the more obscure stuff in the news, some of the not-so-obscure, and some commentary on some of the plain stuff that might be just looking you right dead in the eye. Hi, my name is Mark Belcher. I'll be your host for the next hour. You can join us here on the show if you go over to www.paltalk.com, search around for the Politics Lobby for Patriots Unite Voice Room. We're under the social issues and politics, government and politics. You can find us right in there. Folks, it's craziness is reigning supreme once again. I wanted to start off tonight with the Pentagon here. And this is down off the Associated Press by Ann Guerin and Annie Flaherty. Of course, as always, usual disclaimer here. All articles read on this program are for informational, educational, and discussion purposes only. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said today that tough economic times require that he shutter a major command that employs some 5,000 people around Norfolk, Virginia, and begin to eliminate other jobs throughout the military. The announcement was the first major step by Gates to find $100 billion in savings over the next 5 years. Gates says the money is needed elsewhere within the Defense Department to repair a force ravaged by years of war, and get this, to prepare troops for the next fight, as if the next fight is already lined up. Gates and other Pentagon officials would not put a dollar figure on cuts outlined today, but the savings is expected to be less than what the individual military services are trying to trim on their own. Big cuts are essential considering the strained economy and the likelihood that Congress will no longer give the Pentagon the sizable budget increases that has enjoyed since the attacks of September 11, 2001, Gates said. The political backlash was swift and fierce from lawmakers, fearful that jobs would be lost in their district. Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell, a Republican, said in a hastily called news conference that eliminating Norfolk's Joint Forces Command would deal a devastating blow to the state at a time of runaway federal spending on lower priorities. And we got more on that, too, later. Likewise, Republican Representative Randy J. Forbes called the decision further evidence of this administration allowing its budget for social change and the piecemeal auctioning off of the greatest military the world has ever known. Democrats, including Senators Mark Warner and Jeb Wehm of Virginia, also condemned the move. Warner said he could see no rational basis for eliminating a command created to improve the services' ability to work together and find efficiencies. And he's right about that, because that's exactly what they do. In the business world, you sometimes have to spend money in order to save money, said Warner. And that's why it was established. In a Pentagon press conference, Gates was optimistic that Congress would eventually swing behind his plan, despite lawmakers' control of the budget. He said in the case of Virginia, the state could wind up with additional jobs if the savings found by closing Joint Forces Command enables a boost in shipbuilding. Well, we will see. Eliminating the command would take the backing of President Barack Obama. Obama applauded the overall belt tightening in a statement today, but did not mention JFCOM or two smaller offices set for closure. The funds saved will help us sustain the current force structure and make needed investments in modernization in a fiscally responsible way, Obama said. Change is never easy. And I want to talk a little bit more about this, but, you know, at a time when the world is got 60 different wars happening around, and I mean 60 different wars happening around the world here, you know, with the Islamo-fascists out there just basically tearing the place up, nut jobs like North Korea getting ready to go, more Islamo-fascists in Iran ramping up, which I'm assuming here is going to be the next fight that he's talking about. You know, and you lefties out there, you know, the ones that have been telling me, you know, more and more I keep hearing about Bush's war lately. I want to know whether or not you're going to own up to the fact that when we go into Iran, it will be Obama's war. You know, I'm just, because there's, make no mistake about it, we are headed there. It's been awful quiet coming out of Iran lately. And personally, I think that's the scariest part out of all of it. There's one thing, you know, we were listening a few weeks, well, crazy months ago, we were talking about how the Iranians had, you know, decided that they were going to name 10 new nuclear sites, that they were going to do this and that, and they were enriching more stuff. And they've actually got some of their hexafluorine gas enriched up to 20% now, according to some of the news reports out there today. But other than that, it's been very, very quiet. And that, to me, should be a signal to somebody that something may be coming from there. You know, when they're posturing, when they're balking, when they're talking their asses off, that's when, yeah, you may not have too much to worry about, because it's a feint. But I think the feints are over right now. I think the deeks are over, the side, I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is, but you guys know what I'm talking about here, the moves within moves. Seeing as how it's gotten quiet, I think it's starting to get really scary now. Talking about some more of the money out there where it's being spent in social programs, this has got to kill you today. Now, the House of Representatives plans tomorrow to approve funding that would save an estimated 161,000 teachers' jobs nationwide and pump billions of dollars into depleted state treasuries to help pay health benefits for the poor. The Senate approved the measure last week, so House approval would clear the measure for President Barack Obama to sign into law. Democrats hope that the vote will give the party's candidates a needed jolt of momentum as lawmakers head home for their summer recess before congressional elections in November. The scheduled showdown on the $26.1 billion aid package defines the difference between the two parties, said Representative Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, the chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Well, it sure does. Angry Republicans agreed. The American people don't want more stimulus spending, said House Republican leader John Boehner of Ohio, especially in the form of a payoff to union bosses and liberal special interests. It's unclear who will benefit politically from the extraordinary vote. The House had left for its recess July 30, but when the Senate passed the aid last week on a largely party-line vote, Speaker Nancy Pelosi summoned the House back into session. Traditionally, this is the kind of vote Democrats lick their chops over, but you don't know if it's still as potent as it was 20, 30 years ago. People fear we're spending too much, said Burdette Loomis, an expert on Congress at the University of Kansas. Now, the bill, which the White House strongly supports, would provide $16.1 billion for Medicaid, the state-slash-federal health program for lower-income people, and $10 billion to help local school districts prevent imminent layoffs, according to a Democratic information sheet. The new spending is offset by cuts in other federal spending, including a reduction in food stamp benefits after March 2014, as well as closing some corporate tax loopholes. The Medicaid money is badly needed, according to an analysis by the National Conference of State Legislatures. The federal and state governments jointly fund the program, and under the 2009 Federal Stimulus Act, Washington was to provide extra aid through December the 31st. I'm sorry. Congress had been expected to continue providing the money through the first 6 months of next year. In most states, the last 6 months of fiscal 2011, but lawmakers balked at first. States suddenly faced difficult choices as potential budget shortfalls were estimated to top $1 billion each in California, Texas, New York, and North Carolina alone. in California, spending this fiscal year on local medical services for low-income people is expected to be about $48.8 billion, with administrative and other costs adding $3.3 billion for a total of $52.1 billion, according to the state's nonpartisan legislative analyst's office. Of that, $33.5 billion is to come from Washington's usual share, $12.9 billion from state funds, including the new aid and the legislation, and $5.7 billion from other sources, such as local funds or fees. Well, we'll see about that, won't we? The program, at any rate, here they go on and on, talk about how wonderful this is all going to be. But, you know, the dirty little secret here, the point that's going on here, it's skipping everybody. And granted, the Republicans are right. You know, they're telling everybody, look, they don't want any more spending out there. But why is there such a need for the spending? And that's the part that's got to kill you. You know, the reason that you need all the spending is because the state's income levels are going down. All right, any way you slice it, the states are not raking in the money in taxes that they were 4, 5, 6 years ago. Just ain't happening. During the Bush economic boom, states were taking in more money just like the rest of us. You guys all remember back when they were when Bush first proposed his tax cuts. What was the big cry that we heard from everybody? Oh, you're just going to end up paying more taxes on the state level. Oh, you're just shifting the burden off of the federal government onto the states. Oh, it's going to mean you're going to be paying more state taxes. Oh, it means you're going to be paying more in social costs, blah, 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 blah. You know, none of which ever came true. Because the economic boom not only funded, you know, the federal coffers, it helped fund the state coffers as well. All the states were making money. Even here in Massachusetts, we missed the budget. Now, granted, we had Republican governors back then. You know, but that doesn't mean that our legislature was any more fiscally responsible then than it was now. It's all entirely Democrat. Make no mistake about it. And some of the things that they were finding money for, you would have laughed at. You know, there were millions of dollars going out to theater companies, dance troupes, you name it. Every little which way was getting grants and funding from the state. Every little special interest out there, you know, especially if they had some sort of a liberal slant or a liberal bent to them, had no problem. Boy, they could just fill out the paperwork and their money would be there by the end of the week. But, hey, guess what? None of that's coming here now, you know? None of that's coming in here. So the dirty little secret behind all this is this economy is going down the tubes. It is going down the tubes hard and it's going down fast. And these people here believe that they can borrow from our grandchildren and somehow or another our grandchildren are going to pay them back, you know, without doing a damn thing to actually boost the economy itself. Now, let's face it, it's a lose-lose situation any way you look at it here. I'm not making any predictions as far as what the hell's going to crash or anything else that's going to go down the tubes between here and there, but I'm going to be honest with you. Every single one of these Democrats out there is fretting over keeping his congressional seat this fall. Make no mistake about it. A lot of Republicans are, too. A lot of the incumbents are just, you know, they're shaking in their boots. They're quaking right now. They don't stand a chance. Hell, I mean, there's a senator down there. There's the attorney general from Connecticut is running for the Senate down in Connecticut right now. And, you know, believe it or not, the guy's pretty strong. Did a real good job in the state of Connecticut. But right now it looks like he may be beat out by a lady wrestler who is running against him. It's, It's as funny as it can be. I'll tell you, folks, the nuttiness is reigning supreme out there. All right, off the economics here, we got some more. So I got some good news that actually came out of Germany here tonight. You guys are going to like this. This by Kirsten Greitscheiber off of the AP. A small Hamburg mosque, once frequented by September 11 attackers, was shut down and searched today because German authorities believe the prayer house was again being used as a meeting point for Islamic radicals. The Taiba Mosque was closed, and the cultural association that runs it was banned. Officials in the northern city of Hamburg said, "We have closed the mosque because it was recruiting and meeting point for Islamic radicals who wanted to participate in so-called jihad or holy war," said Frank Reichsreiter, a spokesman for the Hamburg State Interior Ministry. He said 20 police officers were searching the building and had confiscated material, including several computers. He said he had no information about any arrests. The homes of leading members of the cultural association were also searched, and the group's assets were confiscated. Hamburg state government said the prayer house, until 2 years ago, known as the Al-Quds Mosque, was a meeting and recruiting point some years ago for the September 11 attackers before they moved to the United States, authorities say. September 11 ringleader Mohammed Atta, as well as attackers Marwan al-Sehi and Ziad Jarrah, had studied in Hamburg and frequented the Al-Quds Mosque. Rex Ryder said the mosque had been under observation by local intelligence officers for quite a long time, and this was the first time it had been closed. The local interior ministry said about 45 supporters of jihad live in the Hamburg area, or around 200 people regularly attend Friday prayers at the Taiba Mosque. The ministry said that over the years, the mosque had also become a magnet for so-called jihad tourists, Muslims from out of town who bragged about having worshipped at the same mosque where once the September 11 terrorists gathered for prayer. Now, the banned group's homepage on the web had been taken down by today, and it was not possible to reach any members directly. A 2009 report by the Hamburg branch of Germany's domestic intelligence agency said the mosque had again become the center of attraction for the jihad scene in the northern port city. The current imam is Marmoum Darkazanli, who was questioned following the 2001 attacks after it emerged that he moved in some of the circles as the hijackers. Darkazanli, a dual citizen of Germany and Syria, denied any links to Osama bin Laden or the attacks. In October 2004, he was arrested in Hamburg on a Spanish warrant accusing him of involvement with Al-Qaeda and alleging that he was a bin Laden financier. He is a hate preacher, the head of the Hamburg Anti-Terror Department, Lothar Bergmann, said at a news conference. And Manfred Muck, the deputy head of the domestic intelligence agency's local branch, called him an elder statesman of jihad. The Hamburg Interior Ministry said a group of 11 militants who had traveled to military training camps in Uzbekistan in March 2009 was formed at the Taiba Mosque. It said Monday that training courses, sermons, and seminars by the association, as well as texts published on the group's homepage, not only violate the Constitution, but also radicalize listeners and readers. Now, most of the group's members were either German converts of Middle East origin or from the Caucasus region. A very important factor for the radicalization of the group members was certainly their joint visits to the mosque, the intelligence report stated. It appears that one man from the group joined the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan, a terrorist organization in Central Asia. A spokesman for the Association of 30 Mosques in Hamburg condemned the authorities' closure of Taiba Mosque. And then they go on and start crying about it after that. But folks, I think this is good news. I think it's damn smart that the Germans are able to do this and get some support from the Germans. You know, they just try to think about what the hell would happen over here if we tried to close a mosque down for suspected activity. You know, just think of what would happen here if we even thought about investigating these mosques. Now, granted, we do have the FBI looking at some of the training centers and at that big camp that's in upstate New York, and there's another one, a madrasa in Virginia, that is being watched. But, you know, hey, I'm just glad to hear that somewhere the Europeans are waking up, you know, and doing something about all this here. You know, thank God. At some point in time, of course, you know, we Americans, we follow the Europeans with everything they do about 30, 35 years down the road. Well, you know how it is there. You know, Winston Churchill was exactly right. You can count on the Americans to always do the right thing after they have tried everything else. So just a lovely thing here. I think it's wonderful. Thought you guys might like to hear this, especially with the news that's coming out of New York City with the mosque that is going up down there near the 9/11 site. You know, I think this is a tragedy. I can't believe the people in New York are going crazy or are going more crazy over this. Although from what I hear, the news is not reporting some of the protests that are going on down there. I would like to see more of it, actually. I would like to see more reporting on what's going on there. More awareness of what's happening. This mosque that's being built down near Ground Zero, I think it's a travesty. I think people have to understand that whenever the Muslims believe that they have won a battle or a war or anything along these lines, that the first thing they do to cap that battle or to look for recognition for their huge win is to build a mosque on the site. And I firmly believe that that's exactly what's going on down here right now. Now, I did hear some rumors. Maybe it's just a lot of talk, a lot of speculation, but a lot of people say they're going to have a hard time building that mosque. Because who are they going to get to work on it? you know. And another speculation was, well, you know, I could just see this thing getting started to go up and then getting burned down on a daily basis. And then let's see whether or not the New York firefighters will bother to come and put it out. I mean, let's face it, some of the biggest losses that were incurred on that day were the fire departments in New York City. So this is a good thing. I don't know. I'm going to wait and see what's going to happen down there, folks. There will definitely be more on that to come in the future. All right, elsewhere in the news tonight. Hey, one of the things I wanted to look at here, and if you guys, I'm not going to run through all of it, but the McClatchy newspapers today, on their sites, especially the site over at Yahoo News, they've got tons of things that are going on over there and tons of articles that are actually related to all of the stimulus money that is going to be going on out there. There's a lot of people complaining about stuff, and one of them, I'm going to get to five minutes of one of them right here. Now, in March 2009, the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority gave the Department of Energy its plan to use the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for money for weatherization projects, expecting approval in a month, maybe two. Now, it took 5 months. The approval process was protracted, said the Indiana's weatherization manager, Paul Crevens, because the DOE questioned parts of the proposal, including the state's plan to create a centralized purchase program for contractors to buy weatherization materials. Now, the delay certainly came as a surprise, Crevens said. We felt we had justified the process for making those decisions about our plan. Indiana's difficulty in getting its stimulus-funded weatherization projects off the ground isn't an isolated case. This May, a Government Accountability Office report on the use of the stimulus money said that only 13% of the 593,000 home weatherization projects scheduled to be completed by March 31, 2012 under the stimulus package have been finished. The DOE's Weatherization Assistance Program got $5 billion in the stimulus package, which Congress passed in February 2009. In its first 12 months of existence, however, it had spent only 14% of that. Now, Mark Gaffigan, a director of the energy issues at the GAO, said the DOE's slow start wasn't surprising given the surge in funding. I think they've been overwhelmed with the amount of money going out there, he said. Launched in 1976, the Weatherization Assistance Program helps low-income families reduce their energy bills by making their homes more energy efficient. The DOE distributes funding to state governments, which in turn funds the nonprofits, community action agencies, and local governments that perform the work. Since its inception, the DOE reports, the program has provided weatherization services to more than 6 million low-income families, saving them an annual average of about $440 each on their energy bills. It's not too bad. It goes on and on talking about stuff. But basically what they're talking about is how hard it is to get this stimulus money that was put on out there from the Porculus package. You guys remember the Porculus bill, the American Reinvestment and Rejuvenation Act, whatever the hell it was they were calling it there. It's basically just a slush fund for everything, you know. Now, here in Massachusetts, I don't know whether or not, I haven't heard as much moving on it, but you folks may want to take a peek out there. I do know people here in this state who work very, very hard under the table, you know, who don't pay any taxes, claim no actual income, and on the income that they do claim, they claim they give it all away to charity. But a few of these people have had their houses completely and totally redone. All new siding on the house, all new insulated siding, new roofs, new insulated windows, new insulated doors, all of it, all available from the state. Now, I tried to do a search on some of this stuff to see how easy it was to get, and it's not that easy. However, if you are a liberal, you should be able to make connections with the boneheads around here who have done this stuff. If you prove to them that you are liberal enough, wing enough, and worship the correct pine cones, they may point you in the way to get to the paperwork that's going to get you there. Yes, the boneheads. Okay, all right. Now, with that, folks, we are at the bottom of the hour here. It's time for us to take a short break. You are listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com, the best in Internet talk radio. Be right back after these short messages, folks. Thank you.
And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's a helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great. Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through.
Do your part by going to boostup.org and giving a student the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and Lost Cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the Lost Cat Magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a Lost Cat Magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncoke.com, the best in internet talk radio. All right, other things in the news here. Guantanamo judge allows confessions ahead of a trial. Down off the AFP, the Agence France-Presse. The alleged confessions of the last Westerner held at Guantanamo, who was arrested in Afghanistan at age 15, can be heard at trial, a military judge said today. Canadian Omar Khadr's lawyer had argued that his statements were made under duress at Bagram Air Base in Guantanamo Bay. As U.S. President Barack Obama's revamped military commissions opened here to consider two terror cases. Khadr, now 23, appeared in the base's $12 million complex known as Camp Justice in the final preliminary hearing before his trial scheduled to begin Tuesday with a selection of a jury of at least five military officers out of a pool of 15. Military Judge Patrick Parrish, who decided to allow Khadr's alleged confessions to feature in the trial, had in April heard testimony from federal agents and military interrogators who acknowledged using such techniques as stress positions and deep and sleep deprivation during Khadr's questioning. What admitted to threatening a rape scenario in order to influence the detainee? Joe Harris should go back to school and learn some of the basic principles of law and some humanity, said Khadr's lawyer, Dennis Edney, after the proceedings. I guess that's what he said, that it's okay to threaten him with sexual abuse. That's disgraceful. Also appearing in a separate hearing was Ibrahim Ahmed Mahmoud Al-Khosi, 50 years old, who pleaded guilty last month to conspiring to provide material support to terrorism. The former bodyguard of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden was expecting to hear his sentence. The cases are the first to be heard since the tribunals, created by former President George W. Bush, were revamped last year by the Obama administration and Congress to give greater rights to defendants. Khadr, captured at age 15 by U.S. troops in Afghanistan, is accused of throwing a grenade that killed a U.S. soldier during a July 2002 battle. He also is alleged to have been trained by Al-Qaeda in joining a network organized bin Laden to make bombs. He appeared in the courtroom in a white detainee uniform, his head lowered, and did not address the judge, instead having his newly appointed U.S. military lawyer speak for him. As recently as last month, Cotter, an Al-Qaeda operative's son who has denied throwing the grenade that killed an American, said he wanted to represent himself, even expressing his intent to boycott the trial. Cotter, the only Guantanamo detainee charged with murder, has so far refused Washington's offer of 30 years in prison, including 25 in Canada, in exchange for his guilty plea. His lawyer, Edney, said Cotter told him during Monday's proceedings, we are embarrassing ourselves by being here. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper's government has not requested the young man's return, preferring to allow the U.S. trial to run its course. In Kusoy's case, military judge Nancy Paul said the terms of his plea agreement would remain sealed until he is released. Under the terms of his plea deal, the jury of officers being selected today for his sentencing cannot raise the sentence beyond the maximum proposed in the agreement, but it could reduce the punishment if it so chooses. A source familiar with the case told the AFP on condition of anonymity that Kusoy's proposed penalty was between 12 and 15 years. At Monday's hearing, Paul said that by signing the plea deal, Kusoy waived his right to pretrial confinement credit, but that the jury is allowed to consider his eight plus years in detention when determining sentencing. Since 2001, four men have been convicted of terrorism-related charges in Guantanamo Bay military trials, two of whom pleaded guilty, while U.S. federal courts have sentenced some 200 extremists over the same period. This is the funny part about this, folks, is right at the end here. How come it is we haven't heard about these 200 extremists that have been sentenced in 200 extremists sentenced in U.S. federal courts? Why is the news letting us down? That's the point that I'm trying to make here. You know, it seems to me that every single one of these things that goes through here should be a cause for celebration. You know, should be a cause, hey, look, let's face it, we're doing our jobs here. We are fighting, we are combating terrorism, we are locking these people up, we are putting them away. And since 200 of them have been sentenced, you know, you would think you would hear a little more about it. Some strange reason, no, nothing. Nothing at all. It's just, a little funny. At any rate, expect things to get even funnier coming down the line here. We have the first U.S. woman intelligence agency chief appointed. The U.S. government has appointed its first female chief of a major intelligence bureau, with Letitia Long taking over today as director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. That's a new one on me. I never heard it before. The NGA is responsible for collecting and analyzing information from satellite imagery and works with the Pentagon and other departments on defense issues, homeland security, and navigation safety. Its motto is, Know the Earth Shows the Way. Part of its mission is to support combat operations by providing timely geospatial evidence, or geoint, to soldiers and officers on the battlefield or in a theater. Long has spent more than three decades in military and intelligence fields, beginning her career here in the U.S. Navy in 1978. Long served from 2006 until July 2010 as deputy director of the larger Defense Intelligence Agency, which specializes in military intelligence gathering abroad, and before that as deputy undersecretary of defense for intelligence. As engineer by training, she's also numbered for the CIA director. According to statistics from the Office of Director of National Intelligence, which oversees the country's largest spy agencies, women represent 38% of staff employed by the intelligence community. Oh, I take it back. Maybe this isn't going to be so funny. Good luck to her. Looks like they're moving things around there. Let's wait and see. I would imagine that this is probably the only little bit of news that she is going to get. But, hey, nice to know that somebody is up on things there. You know, one of the things that I was really worried about here during this part of the end of the election terms, especially going into this recess that they're having right now, was that, you know, the government, and government workers as a rule just take holiday. You know, yeah, I can't really state so much on the federal level, but I know on the state levels, hey, you know, look, the highways around here are jammed on the 15th and the 31st of each month. on the 15th of the month, and then whatever the last day of the month is. And the reason that the highways are jammed is because all the state workers are heading into work to collect their paychecks. Otherwise, they're going to be taking a day off or on holiday or vacation or whatever the hell it is you want to take. I mean, they got X amount of days off each year for sick days, X amount of days off for personal days, whatever the hell it is, you know? And so generally, the rest of the time, they're screwing around just, you know, taking your money and having a good old time with it. So, nice to know that some of them out there are still on the ball. All right. With that being said, next thing we got here in a stack of stuff. What did I have? Well, we got this guy down here. That one then. Yes. Now, tomorrow, going to be some news out here. And, this is actually down off the Reuters Network by Ryan Vlastelica. Came out right before the show started here tonight. U.S. stocks rose today in the quietest session of the year on speculation that the Federal Reserve would signal potential steps to boost the sluggish economic recovery. The volume was a mere 5.71 billion shares compared with last week's estimated daily volume of 9.65 billion shares. As investors were wary of taking new positions before the Fed statement tomorrow, a sell-off in shares of Hewlett-Packard limited the Dow's gains. In recent days, the market has reacted to the possibility of additional action from the Fed to revive the economy. That talk intensified after Friday's weaker-than-expected jobs report for July. Now, we're expecting the Fed to officially lay the groundwork for a policy change predicated on another month of economic data, said Quincy Crosby, market strategist for Prudential Financial in Newark, New Jersey. Now, if they actually come out and say they're going to start a new plan tomorrow, it might actually spook the market into believing that things are much worse than we thought. That's definitely going to be my first opinion. The central bank could resume purchases of certain debt securities to lower interest rates to encourage borrowing. Let's parse that statement out. The central bank could resume purchases of certain debt securities to lower interest rates to encourage borrowing, which means, well, where are they getting the money from to do this? That's what I would want. That's the question. The central bank is going to go out there and purchase certain debt securities. Well, they're the ones who probably issued these debt securities. Now, since they've issued them, where are they getting the money to do this unless they're issuing other ones to someone else somewhere and or printing the money? That makes you want to wonder, huh? It also could halt payment on interest on banks' excess reserves to encourage lending. Stop and think about that statement. It could also halt payment on interest on banks' excess reserves to encourage lending. So in other words, if a bank has excess reserves, it should be earning interest on it. And in order to get them to stimulate them to lend that money out so that they can make money, well, they'll just refuse to pay them the interest that they owe them. That ought to be a way to get things going there, right? That should make the bankers do it. So what are we doing here? It's the carrot or stick method, I think is what we're looking at here, folks. It appears to me that they're taking the carrot away and moving the stick around to the back of the donkey and going to beat it on the ass. That always works with bankers. Now, despite the fact that the bankers do not care what you do to pay your debts, they want to see you in debt. Yes, no doubt about that. Make no mistake in that direction. But, if it takes a little prodding on their part to move you, well, hey, they have no problem. But prod them and watch what happens. Just gotta love this. Stocks have generally reacted well on Fed days since the zero interest rate policy was put in place in December 2008. The S&P 500 is up 85% in those days with average gains of 1.18% according to Bespoke Investment Group of Harrison, New York. But Bespoke wrote that because the Fed is expected to make changes in its comments, trading following tomorrow's statement could prove to be more volatile than recent announcements. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 45.19 points, or 0.5%, just under 0.5%, at 10,698. And S&P 500 was up 6.15 points, or another 0.5%, at 1127, almost 1128. The NASDAQ Composite Index was up almost 0.75% at 2305.69. Now, the U.S. Central Bank is expected to release its statement at 2:15 tomorrow. Hewlett-Packard Company was by far the top drag at the 4260 after Chief Executive Mark Hurd resigned late Friday. The news of his resignation following an investigation into sexual harassment charges by a female contractor sent the company's shares down 10% in extended trade on Friday. Among rising stocks, McDonald Corporation hit a lifetime high of $73.33 after it reported July sales data that was stronger than expected. Though the stocks later pared gains to end at $72.92, up 1.6%. McDonald's sales could prove somewhat troubling in the future if consumers are still going for discounts rather than spending at higher-end places, said Paul Nolte, managing director at Dearborn Partners in Chicago. The NASDAQ got a boost from Research in Motion Limited. Research in Motion, whose U.S. listed shares rose 3.5% to $55.31. Earlier, a Saudi official said the BlackBerry maker and Saudi mobile firms were testing three servers to send communications and data through Saudi Arabia before Canada to address Riyadh's concerns over security. What the hell is that going to do with anything? Goldman Sachs cut its year-end target for the S&P 500 index to 1,200 from 1,250, reflecting a lower U.S. growth forecast. The weak GDP growth forecast and specter of deflation mean top-line sales increases will be hard to achieve, the firm wrote to clients. Advancing stocks outnumbered declining ones on the New York Stock Exchange by a ratio of about 3-1. On the NASDAQ, about two stocks rose for every one that fell. All right, folks, a couple little tiny things that you got to look at in here, okay? The specter of deflation, the weak GDP growth forecast, and the specter of deflation. Look, things aren't moving here. When you see McDonald's climbing up, the writer of this article here, Ryan Blasdelica, is probably hitting the nail right on the head, all right? Instead of going to some of the higher-end places like Quiznos, some of the bigger sandwich shops, I can't think of the names. So, man, hell with it. Let's just go to McDonald's, save a buck. That's exactly what's happening when McDonald's is booming like that. You got to sit and ask yourself, one of the places going down, but we don't really know because they're private now, aren't they? Yeah, not really being traded on the market. You have no idea where the hell they are headed to. But it's not looking good at any rate. I would expect tomorrow's session in the market to be somewhat on the reserved side until this until they make their announcement as to what they're going to do. I would expect most of the trading to stop during the announcement and then after, because everyone will be waiting with bated breath, including myself, to see exactly what is going to come out. I should say that, actually. I'm probably going to be playing golf tomorrow afternoon with my son and my son-in-law. However, we'll see what's coming home, what happens in the afternoon. But, folks, like I said, there isn't much to look at here. The specter of deflation is coming down the road here. All right, like, look, they know what the specter of deflation is being caused by. Things are not moving. Durable goods are not moving. Services are not moving. Lots of things are not moving out there. And the only way they're going to be able to get these things moving, which, you know, and I'm here to tell you that this time next week, what you're going to be hearing about are manufacturers reducing their inventories once again. You know, and when you hear these reduction of inventories going on, and some sales moving, and products moving here and here and there, I'm here to tell you, folks, what we're looking at there, there's going to be some liquidation going on. That liquidation means a lot of things are going to be selling at lower prices. Okay, people who will be liquidating all of this merchandise, all of these goods around here, okay, will be having a problem making their loan payments. I expect to see, I wouldn't see so much going up in bankruptcy court, although you may see a lot of reorganization going on here over the next couple of months. Not a pretty situation, folks. Not a pretty situation at all. Now, couple that with the news that we had here earlier tonight. Okay, we have imminent layoffs of teachers all over the country. All right, now, of course, the Democrats are telling you, we got to have this because this is going to happen. And the Republicans are telling you, well, this is all going out to the union hacks and to all their cronies. You know, but the fact of the matter is the states are not doing well. All right, you know, it's pretty much at this point in time, I believe, an established fact. The states aren't bringing in the tax money that they're bringing in. You know, and why not? It's because of a sluggish economy. It's because things aren't moving. It's that things are down. You know, once again, I point to the area that I live in right around here. Many, many things are just not moving around here. You know, we haven't quite hit ghost town status yet, but there are areas in my town that are still a little bit more scared. You know, as I said, once again, nobody is moving in around here with any car dealerships or anything. We had one local car guy here. The GMC guys managed to hang on to his place and has managed to get everything straightened out with GMC and is able to sell trucks again. quite a while there, he could not do it. Couldn't order with him, couldn't do anything. Now he's back in business, and he seems like he's moving around. But Dodge dealers, gone. Other GM dealers, gone. Ford dealer, gone. Places are still sitting empty. These are prime pieces of commercial real estate sitting here in town with a couple of really good buildings on them. Why haven't they been sucked up by somebody yet? I'll tell you why they haven't been sucked up. Because the future is too uncertain. No one's going to major investments in any sort of building projects out there right now. No one's going to make any investments in a new business in an uncertain future where you have no idea where the taxes are going to go. You have no idea where the regulations are going to go. You have no idea how much it's going to be costing you for the healthcare debacle that's coming down the road. You have no idea exactly how all of this financial bill that was passed a couple of weeks ago is going to wash down. I mean, let's face it, when that bill got passed, I was amazed at the stock market, although it dropped right away, started to climb again, you know, and I'm still wondering to this day exactly what is it that is driving it to climb again. Call at this point. I can't explain it. I'm going to be honest with you. I always blame mutual fund managers for on big moves in the market one way or another. You know, it's of course, personal bugaboo. You know, whether or not I'm always right on that, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I firmly believe that once upon a time, Elliott Spitzer hit that one right on the head. Despite everything that Elliott Spitzer shook down, and, you know, despite the fact that, he is where he belongs now, which is not in the government. I still say these mutual fund managers are the ones moving the market, and they move it on rumors. Make no mistake about it. You know, the rumors that are heard at the gym, the rumors that are heard in the coffee shops, what have you. These are the guys that are moving the stock market up and down. I can't believe that all the personal investors out there in Hewlett Packard just decided to dump their shares, you know, because Mark Hurd got fired. I mean, come on, give me a break, all right? Look, this is still Hewlett Packard. Hewlett Packard is not just Mr. Hurd, all right? Hewlett Packard is a huge corporation with lots of people working for it. It's coming out with lots of nice stuff and has been a mover and shaker in that market for a long time. You know, how did all of a sudden it lose 8% of its value in one day? Stop and think about that. You mean every single person that's got that out there had to stop and think twice because Mark Hurd got nailed with a sexual scandal? Give me a break. I just ain't buying it. All right? I'm sorry. There's just too many shares out there being moved through too many hands. It's going to make that kind of stuff happen. So, folks, I don't know. You know, this summer of recovery, no, I'm not buying any summer of recovery whatsoever. All right, what else have we got in the news out here tonight? There was another thing in the stack stuff, which I think has been moved out. Okay. Mortgage finance giant Freddie Mac said today that it would need another $1.8 billion in aid from taxpayers, bringing its total request since it was taken over by the government 2 years ago to more than $64 billion. The second largest U.S. residential mortgage funds provider reported a loss of $6 billion, $1.85 per diluted share in the second quarter, including a $1.3 billion dividend payment to the U.S. government. So they need to get $1.8 billion in aid, but they had to make a $1.3 billion dividend payment to the government. Okay, that compares with $8 billion loss in the prior quarter and is the best 3-month performance in the year. The firm lost $840 million in the second quarter of last year. The company said losses stem primarily from loans purchased and guaranteed between 2005 and 2008. Freddie Mac and his sister entity Fannie Mae at the height of the financial crisis in 2008 as loan losses mounted. Since the government takeover, they have requested close to $150 billion from the government's unlimited credit line, scheduled to expire at the end of 2012. The plan to put Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac into conservatorship was meant to be tempered. But nearly 2 years later, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner has only just begun the process of figuring out how to overhaul the U.S. housing finance system. Geithner has called for a conference on the future of housing finance to be held at the Treasury later this month. And folks, it's something you ought to be scared about. The financial regulatory overhaul, which was signed into law by President Barack Obama last month, did not address reorganizing Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, though it did restrict some mortgage lending practices that led to risky loans. Freddie Mac said loans made last year in the first half of this year has significantly lowered default rates than comparable loans made in 2000. The company said about a third of its portfolio of single-family home loans consisted of newer, higher-quality loans. Fannie Mae has also said stricter lending standards adopted last year are beginning to pay off, and the firm's new book of business is the strongest in a decade. Congress has scheduled hearings in the U.S. housing finance system in the coming months, and any new system could take years to implement. Think about that. All right. What they're admitting to you here is that there is a U.S. housing finance system. Okay? Read that, federal government housing finance system. All right? That thought should send tingles up and down your spine. All right? And this is something you really got to stop and think about here, folks. The federal government being the prime lender of mortgages and of housing. Stop and think about that for a second. Do you really want the federal government to be the one in charge of your mortgage? I don't know, folks. I'll tell you what. They make their laws arbitrarily and at the whims of lawmakers. Whims that can change with the wind on a daily basis. Really want a federal government in charge of all of this. They may be putting themselves in a position to tell you how and why and which way and what should be done with you to pay your mortgage. And let's face it, they're going to want to keep you in your house. And they're going to want you to stay because, hey, that way you're in debt to them. You know, they want you working for them. It's not enough of these people that we're already working, you know, until the end of May, beginning of June each year, just to pay the tax burden on each and every family in this country. Now, that is something that they desire to have go up. I don't know. Very, 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 very stinky. Very, very stinky things going on down here, folks. You know, I expect them, I think the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, going to be something that becomes completely taken over by a whole new government department. Now, you got to stop and ask yourself a couple things here. You know, look, they're paying dividends to the federal government. Okay, now, why do they pay dividends? Okay, what is it that the federal government is holding that they deserve to get dividends? Well, the federal government is obviously holding bundles of mortgages and or, okay, dividends. Don't forget that. That's a key word right there, dividends. Okay, they are either A, holding stock in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, or they are holding bonds. All right, don't forget, bondholders have always got to get paid whatever the terms of the bond are. All right. If you don't pay off your bondholders, what happens? You go into receivership with the bondholders taking control of you. All right, that's why Goldman Sachs and all the rest of the financial companies out on Wall Street cried the blues and got the TARP bill. And I don't forget that. The TARP. You guys all know what I'm talking about. Troubled Asset Resuscitation Program, whatever the hell it was there. The reason they went crying is because they could not make their dividend payments to their bondholders. The bondholders would have taken them into receivership. You know, they were crying about a collapse in the whole economic system of the entire world. Well, what it really would have meant was the good old boy network at the top of all these companies would have been replaced with more efficient people. They would have lost their jobs and would have had to go on out and find work just like the rest of us. Well, that's the big difference here. Same thing is going to be happening over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They will do whatever it is it's going to take to keep their jobs. I don't know, folks. I'll tell you what. This is a gruesome thing, and it's very sickening. And I don't know. I don't have a lot of good news on this report here. Guarantee you that I will be keeping my eyes on it over the weeks to come, and will report it dutifully and faithfully. At any rate, as dutifully and faithfully as I can here, I got to give the Mater D a hand. Finish up. He's got it. Of course, I got. Loaded him up on a couple of things here, and he's the guy's been so damn good that I just, you know, I gave him a raise, but of course the raise had to come with a couple extra duties, and he ain't too quite sure about the duty side. I'm gonna go make sure he knows exactly what it is. But in the meantime, the tables once again are getting piled high with the chairs, the lights are growing dim, and it's time to close the cafe down. As always, the bar will be open. First round of drinks is on me, so you can all come on over to the bar at Politics Lobby 4 Patriots Unite Voice Room here on Pal Talk and belly up and have some fun. But in the meantime, folks, we will see you this time next week. Thanks a lot for coming in. You have LiftCode.com, the best in internet talk radio. Good night, folks. We'll see you all next week.
Thank you.